What advice do you give fleet operators who are hesitant of adopting emissions tracking technology?
Emissions tracking isn't just about regulations. It's, of course, about running a more efficient, more profitable fleet, which is something that we touched on earlier, but it is a way to attract more business. You know, emission tracking capabilities and sustainability in general show up in 80% of shipper RFPs now, which is a huge, huge number. And so if you're looking to secure more business or make yourself in general more attractive, this is probably the best way to do it with the current environment. I would say, you know, start small and build up over time. So many fleets assume that emissions tracking is a massive undertaking. If you're working with Greener, it's not. But even if you're not, you don't have to overhaul everything overnight. So I would say definitely know your data sources. Start with simple data collection, tracking your fuel usage and your mileage. And then gradually layering in more detailed reporting over time.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast, Caution Wide Right, brought to you by Compliance Navigation Specialists. I'm Luke, your host, and today we're going to be talking about emissions. Yes, emissions. If you're in the trucking industry, you know that safety and compliance reporting and management is critical, and it's why we at CNS are here. To help you navigate, track, and manage your safety and DOT compliance requirements. Well, now there is a growing push for fleet emissions tracking and reporting, from the SEC climate-related disclosure ruling to CARB's Climate Corporate Data Accountability Act. New regulations are emerging fast, and emissions compliance is becoming the new norm. It is easy to imagine that supply chains are not tracking this information accurately, as they're not given the proper resources or to report something that they don't even really fully understand. That's where Greener comes in. It's carbon reporting made easy for fleets. And similar to CNS, their mission is to take the burden of navigating complex regulations off of you while making you more attractive in a hyper-competitive market. Joining me today is Celine King, founder and CEO of Greener. She's here to break down how Greener's bottom-up approach to carbon accounting is transforming the way trucking companies manage emissions. Celine, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Luke. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
All right. So before we talk about how you started it, how quickly you got out of college and turned your passion of sustainability into this career and this business, I did see that some of your college activities beyond sports and sustainability and health was also Animal Lovers Club. And I'm just curious, as an animal lover myself, what did the club do, and what are your favorite animals or pets, or do you have something at home?
Great question. The club was amazing. Actually, when I first started university, I was on a pre-veterinarian track. So my full intent was to go to veterinarian school, and obviously my career trajectory didn't go that way, but I have a dog at home. She's a Cavapoo, and I'm biased, and I have to say that my favorite animals are in fact dogs, because I love my puppy Penny so much.
Love it. And I come from a household where we had ferrets, cats, dogs, fish, birds. My daughter is a huge wolf lover, and try to get her involved in that kind of stuff. But that's fun. That's exciting. So I am curious, going from college and a few years going down the sustainability route, sort of figuring out where you want to put your time and effort into, you eventually started Greener. Tell me, what was this process? What was this timeline like for you?
Yeah. So I actually thought I was going to be going to veterinarian school, and I ended up taking an environmental ethics course that sort of changed my trajectory. That environmental ethics course was taught by Richard Hyman, who's actually now my partner and president of Greener. So he retired and he ended up working with me full time, which is pretty cool.
That's awesome. The person that
inspired me to have a career in climate ended up being the one to build this business with me. And so I ended up thinking that I was going to be doing climate science, because I was, you know, a bio major at the time. So I was doing climate change research for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. It was cool. Super nerdy. I loved it. we were measuring the meat quality of Dungeness crab and how it was affected by climate change induced factors. So super niche, and I had the opportunity to present that to policymakers. And you know, that research was dismissed pretty quickly. And so it just sort of hit home that if I wanted to have an impact, it probably wasn't going to be in climate research, or it wasn't going to be in climate science. And so switched onto the business side of things, tried to develop a hard skill, which is business and data analytics. And so I ended up working at Greenbacker Capital for a short time, which is a private equity firm that invests in renewable infrastructure and sustainable assets, which I've realized is a very fancy way of saying solar and wind. And told myself I'd never say that again, but amazing, amazing firm. But it just wasn't a perfect fit for me. And I was lucky enough to join Fairfield University Startup Program, which is, you know, an accelerator for early stage companies, and was given the proper resources, the proper support, and network to really pursue this, or to have the opportunity to pursue it full time. And so I did, and then I stuck with it.
That's awesome. And, you know, my background in college was focused on entrepreneurship focused business. So my mindset of like starting a business, growing a business, and all the nuance with it, that, you know, the highs and lows of what comes with that, I'm sure we'll break down further in a little bit. But I am curious. So, you know, when we're talking with fleets, you know, a lot of our audience, trucking companies, medium, large size fleets are listening in. And of course, a lot of this is sort of that, so what? Why do fleets need to care about this? And a lot of it comes down to fleets, especially bigger fleets, are realizing that their top customers are pressuring them for emissions data on the fleet. I think a CCJ poll last year, they you know, polled their audience, and they said about 20% of shippers were asking about this type of data. And I'm sure that data is that, that information, that poll is only going to see more and more uptake in people seeing that that shippers are asking about this information. What is the problem for fleets if they have, if they say no to, I don't know what my sustainability goals are?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think that 20% figure is probably going to continue to grow, which is even independent of sort of, you know, volatile political sort of environments. And there's always evolving regulation. But right now, what you're going to see is that trucking companies are facing increasing pressure to report their fleet emissions. And the number one source of this pressure is their customers, just like what you said. And when I say customers, I'm really talking about large organizations with a supply chain, mainly Fortune 500 companies or multinational corporations that, in anticipation of upcoming regulation from California or Europe, have started to require fleets in their supply chain to report in order to do business with them. So it might not affect every fleet in the same way. It totally depends on your customer base, but I guarantee you that if you are caring for a shipper that is impacted by one of the regulations, they're going to come knocking on your door. And so if you aren't going to comply, and I think a lot of what we run into is a wait and see sort of attitude. You know, regulations changing, there's a new administration. Is this a trend? Is this going to stick around? And over again, what we try and tell the companies that we work with is that this is in, this is not an if I have to report. It's more of a when do I need to report. So timelines might change. But, you know, those same customers that are asking for this data, regulations and accelerator, but they were asking for this data before that because they have shareholder expectations, they have consumer driven pressure. And you not complying or you not giving the data just gives your peer a competitive advantage over you because you know, they are looking. And when they're sourcing contracts, when they're sourcing bids, they're looking for a green partner.
Yeah. And when we see this in sort of like, what does that day-to-day look like? It's literally, hey, let's say a fleet, you know, maybe 50, 60, 70, 80% of their contracts or their loads that they're getting, let's say it's Coca-Cola. Well, Coca-Cola has a mandate for their shareholders of improving, you know, sustainability by, you know, double or whatever their numbers that they want to track is, whether that's to meet federal or other type of regulations or just their own, you know, shareholders. that then they have to look at, okay, well, where is the, you know, sustainability or emission saving coming from? And we know that supply chain is the biggest. I'm curious, can you break down some of the stats in supply chain emissions?
Yeah. So, and your point is totally valid. And a good example I can give of this is one of the fleets that we worked with carries for a Fortune 500 customer that requires them to report quarterly. And it, this came out of nowhere starting last August. And it had nothing to do with regulation. It was for this particular customer's corporate sustainability report. Initially, the company said no. And that shipper was willing to break a $3 million contract just because they weren't going to give the data. And so the pressure is more inflexible. And I think to your point, part of the reason why is if you start to look at large sources of emissions for an organization, up to 72% of their carbon footprint, if they have a supply chain, comes from upstream and downstream trucking. Right. And it's, you know, not at all pointing fingers. It's almost like, of course, because trucking is such a critical component of the economy and of the supply chain. And so it just means that they're even more of a target. They're even more of a focus for reporting and reduction, which is really unfortunate because they're not given the proper resources. They're not given the proper tools and technology or support from the same customers that are asking them to do this type of reporting.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's also, you know, the other side of it too is, if you think us, you know, a lot of large, like the sea companies that are shipping freight overseas, you know, a lot of what they're doing is, if they're trying to improve sustainability, it's, you know what, we're just going to create our own in-house fleet versus using other resources where, or, you know, the different loads contracts that they're doing with, you know, private companies. And it's just makes that competition even harder when you're trying to find good customers to work with, and they're just internalizing things themselves just because they can hit those sustainability things, those sustainability goals even quicker. So you need to have those answers in place of, what's your sustainability goal as a company? How are you tracking this information? And then, hey, look, we're looking good. And for any, you know, we had a fleet manager on about a month ago, and he was saying, like, look, we want to be your number one customer. What does that need? What do we need to do that? And a lot of that discussion now is coming down to sustainability, emissions tracking. We need to know this information. So I do want you to sort of quickly break down, what is Greener, a software platform that does a lot of this reporting. Break down what Greener does and how it makes it easy for fleets.
Yeah. So we are, in general, Greener is a carbon accounting company. We are vertically specific to trucking and logistics. So we don't work with any other industries. We're specialized for the trucking industry, which is really important because, as you know, there's unique operational characteristics of trucking that make these calculations specific to the industry. Right. And so the way that our platform works, it automatically measures fleet emissions in real time, and then in turn will generate regulation compliant emission reports for fleets to distribute to customers, to stakeholders, any third party that's requesting the data. We make the reporting push button. And so the way that we're able to do that is through, for every fleet, we integrate with two systems. So the first is their telematics provider. So we're platform agnostic, no matter who they're using, whether it's Geotab, Isaac Instruments, OmniTrax, we can integrate, and we're pulling real-time vehicle performance data directly from every vehicle. And then the other system that we integrate with is actually their fuel card. And so, you know, we're looking at fuel transaction data. Where was this fuel event taking place in terms of coordinate location, the fuel type, the amount that was spent, what fuel type? And so through combining, you know, telematic vehicle performance data with fuel transactional data, we have a very accurate idea of what emissions looks like, both on a vehicle and a fleet level, because we're utilizing two primary data sources. Probably the most important part for the trucking companies is that we're integrating through an API, which means there's zero lift from their IT teams. We can be up and running in less than 14 days. And from that point on, everything is automated. So there's no manual entry. If you want to view your performance, if you want to look at the analytics, you just log in. If you want to report, you select the time period and you just press download. So we're taking what is historically a 40-hour process per customer request, you know, in spreadsheets with an internal team that's crunching numbers or that's responding to these 200 question surveys. And we're making it a 5-second process.
Most truckers are struggling to manage their safety and compliance for their fleets. It can be overwhelming. And that's where our DOT compliance motor carrier program comes in. It's specifically designed for long-haul interstate carriers. Picture this, an entire compliance team dedicated to making your life easier. How? By simplifying your DOT compliance and managing things like driver qualification files, new driver onboarding, vehicle maintenance, drug and alcohol testing, and even your fuel taxes. Your team will also be holding quarterly driver safety meetings, monitoring your CSA scores, and taking care of any licensing and credential renewals. With that said, we all know DOT audits are inevitable, but what is important is that you are fully prepared for when they do come. And with our DOT Compliance Motor Carrier Program, you have a full team to support you throughout an audit. So, don't let a few small mistakes lead to audits, fines, or anything else that will hurt your business. Let CNS help. If you want more information, just call or email now, or you can fill out the form below, and one of our DOT compliance specialists will help you out. And,
you know, that's the same
let
sort of
CNS
way
be
like
your partner's success, saving you money and ensuring a smoother journey on the road.
Look, you know, pulling reports and then using that data in a quick and useful way. So that's awesome. And I know, you know, Greener has sort of gained traction quickly, and it's been, you know, a lot of things are moving very, very fast, partnerships and other things like that. I'm curious, you know, especially from like a startup mindset, what's been sort of the biggest learning experience as since you've launched the company?
It's a good question. I could keep you here all day.
I bet.
Painful lessons and things like that. I think, you know, there's a lot of lessons. I think from a startup perspective, one of the most important things that I've learned, at least what feels like on a personal level, and I think my team would agree with me, is that our tolerance to uncertainty and the frequency in which we're receiving bad news or setbacks is unbelievably high. And so like this was sort of a super uncomfortable thing for me to develop when we were first getting started, that, you know, someone once told me that when you're on the right path, the path disappears, and it's like, okay, now we're 3 years in and the path is completely gone and we love it. But in the beginning, that was a super sort of difficult thing where, you know, it's 10 steps forward, 9 steps back, or, you're expecting things to go perfectly because you love your idea and you think you've built a good product, but, maybe you haven't tested it enough with the industry. And so, those are sort of, I would say, obvious startup lessons that we've had to endure. But I think almost most surprisingly, from a customer perspective and through conversations with fleets that we're working with, it became really clear that sustainability being enforced from the top down in this industry is actually deeply unfair. And so I mentioned this because the way that we went to market completely changed once we started to understand how unfair this was impacting the industry. And so, of course, I support environmental initiatives and regulations because I care deeply about the planet. But there's this significant disconnect between large organizations that are mandating sustainability and the level of support that they're providing carriers in their supply chain. So whether it's financial or strategic, the assistance that's available to carriers is sort of disappointingly limited. And many of these fleets are being left to struggle with implementing these initiatives. They don't have adequate incentives. There's no green premiums. There's no higher rates or meaningful rewards for adopting sustainable practices that their peers haven't. And so, you know, whether this is from an emissions reporting angle or electrification, adopting alternative fuels, I've sort of observed that Fortune 500 companies are demanding asset upgrades and enhanced reporting without fully grasping the burden that it's putting on internal teams. And so I think that has probably been one huge I'll just say, discovery from our customer base that has greatly informed how we're viewing our partnership with these companies, where, you know, it's much more personal and it's, you shouldn't have to be dealing with this. And we understand that this is unfair and we genuinely want to help you versus just selling, you know, sustainability or compliance. It's not about that anymore.
Yeah. And that's really the same way that we approach it here with safety and compliance with the DOT regulations is, hey, when 2017 ELDs were rolled out, you know, it was the argument for safer, you know, less crashes, right? And it's like, okay, well, this expensive mandate is what? Going to save, according to their data, like 96 lives a year. That's 96 lives and that's important. But at the same time, for a fleet, and you're thinking about the costs and the transition and the process that it went about to forcing all of this, you know, nationwide and then eventually worldwide, it does seem like that number is, you know, laughably small. Like, that isn't the real goal here. It's just what you're using as an excuse to. So there's a lot of that sort of distrust in whether it's regulations and the rollout and the true, you know, the big fleets are getting things more their way than smaller fleets are getting pushed out. And that's a whole argument in the trucking industry. And, you know, I know when it comes to, you know, sustainability in trucking, a lot of the numbers that a lot of companies like to stress, state trucking associations like to stress and more, are saying like, hey, well, in 1988, you know, we've improved, you know, such and such percentage. You know, look, we're a whole lot more cleaner than, you know, 30 years ago. It's like, yeah, well, that's true, but there's more work to do and regulations are still coming and changing. And what we're looking for 10, 20, 30 years down the road, you know, that 30-year number is nice, but it's like we have to do more. And so the complexity, this comes with complexity of, okay, now fleets have diesel or other fuel blends. They have, you know, maybe it's some EV or maybe it's some hydrogen or natural gas or other types of vehicles. And so I can imagine from your end, as long as you know what the fleet is and what the vehicle is and using the telematic data, that those numbers can, you know, be managed in a way to be able to, you know, once you understand the fleet, being able to manage the emissions tracking part of it. But I am curious about sort of that shifting political priorities. You know, right now, a lot of things are changing in a political world. What does that look like on environmental sustainability for fleets? And, you know, whether you want to look at a crystal ball, you know, even 1-2 years to 4, 5, 6 years plus.
Yeah. And also just I'll quickly say that you're absolutely right when you're talking about alternative fuels, because I think one of the biggest things that we see is that shippers want fleets to electrify without fully understanding, without providing them the capital to do that, but without having an appreciation for the lack of infrastructure, and that maybe this doesn't make sense for this particular fleet's operations if they're long haul. And there's much more practical solutions that we've seen adopted that we've measured that are more effective. You touched on it by saying, you know, the adoption of alternative fuels, particularly bio and renewable diesel, and measuring those reductions to something that our software does, so that then those trucking companies can go back to their customers and brag to them about how sustainable they were. Cool. Yeah, with quantitative data points. But from a regulatory perspective, specific to this industry, I think it's really important for fleets to understand that the trucking industry itself is actually not the primary target of regulations. It's just heavily impacted because the regulations are aimed at large corporations and companies that have to report their supply chain emissions. And of course, trucking is a key part of many of these supply chains. And so companies that are facing this type of regulation that's forcing them to report supply chain emissions are then pushing that burden down onto the fleets that they're working with, whether you're upstream or downstream in their supply chain. And so There's a new administration. I'm sure you've seen a lot of the headlines. It seems like the regulatory environment is super volatile. And so I think if I had a crystal ball, what you would see is that federal emission regulations are probably going to slow down. It's likely that they might even roll back due to shifting political priorities. You know, there's the possibility of loosened requirements in terms of who's in scope and who does this regulation actually impact, or delayed enforcement on a national level.
Yes.
I will never say that the SEC climate disclosure ruling was a fairy tale, because that does not sound optimistic, but I think it was going to take a little bit more than what was initially drafted. And so I'm actually not sure to the degree that companies were anticipating having to report to the SEC. What is really causing, I'll call it a pain point, and what you're going to see now more than ever because of the new administration is state level emission regulations intensifying. And it's not just California, but they're a really good example where there's laws that are created by the state, like SB 253, which is a California regulation. And I can go into more detail, but it essentially requires public and private companies that make over $1 billion in revenue or more that quote unquote do business in California to report all three scopes of their emissions, including the supply chain. So that impacts an incredibly large number of companies, even those that are out of state. And so it's just sort of interesting, you know, New York's a copycat state. I think you're going to see this over and over again. And then I would just mention also that the impact goes beyond government mandates. There's other market forces that are driving the change. And like you've said before, you know, these shippers and even the shippers' investors are setting their own emissions goals. And so even if federal regulations ease, strong companies are going to face pressure to provide the emissions data in order to win and retain the business.
Yeah, and it makes total sense for California. You know, California's, you know, it's the breadbasket for a whole lot of stuff. And if you're thinking, hey, my company works a little bit with it, well, you're going to have to deal with those regulations in some form and fashion, which, you know, whether or not the rules will, it'll eventually roll out potentially nationwide. And we've seen that happen in a lot of different ways, but you still have to deal with the state specifically. What, you're just going to cut off California? No, you're not. And so that's where, you know, it makes complete sense. And, you know, large companies, you know, having to deal with this, it's not like they're going to have, oh, my company in a different part of the country doesn't have to follow these rules. No, they're just going to roll it out, make it easy. And then, and that's just going to be the standard. And it makes sense. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, that specific rule. I'm curious, you know, from the fleet's perspective, you know, you mentioned sort of scope 1, 2, and 3, I believe that's greenhouse gas, you know, priorities. Explain scope 1, 2, and 3 to for a fleet manager, and maybe even putting on the hat of being like, they probably even don't know what that means.
Yeah. So when you report emissions, it's done in, typically in three scopes. So scope 1 emissions are emissions that are generated from your direct operations. So if you're a trucking company, your scope 1 emissions are the same thing as your fleet emissions, generated from vehicles that you own or operate, in the same way that if you were, let me think of a good example. If you were a manufacturing company, what are the emissions associated from manufacturing the products that you're manufacturing? And so scope 1 is probably the easiest to understand. It is most definitely the easiest to measure. Scope 2 emissions are emissions that are generated from purchase electricity or from buildings that you own or operate. So if you're a fleet that has distribution centers or facilities, a headquartered location, you could think utility bills. So any electricity that you're purchasing to run buildings and facilities that you own or operate, there are emissions associated with that electricity, and that's considered scope 2. And then scope 3 emissions are emissions that are generated upstream or downstream of the reporting company. And unlike scope 1 and scope 2, there's 15 categories of scope 3. It's incredibly nasty to measure scope 3, no matter what industry you're in, because it's so complex, since it's not something that is in your direct control. So For example, if you're, again, a trucking company, scope three, category three emissions are the upstream emissions associated with fuel that your vehicles are burning. But to put it into better context for emissions reporting, a shipper's scope three emissions include their supply chain. So a trucking company's fleet emissions, which are their scope one, is their customer scope three. And that's sort of the relationship when you're seeing regulations that say, oh, wow, scope three emissions are included in, you know, SB 253 or CSRD, and everyone's sort of jarred that they're having to report. It's because it includes their supply chain.
Yep. Yeah, it makes sense. And so I'm curious, what are some of the common misconceptions that fleets have about emissions, reporting and compliance?
I would say, and something maybe we touched on before, was the attitude that this will go away because of political changes making it irrelevant, when the reality is that emissions reporting is no longer about compliance and policies are going to shift and the demand for transparency is actually being driven by customers. And so I think that's one sort of misconception. And even if penalties for non-compliance aren't immediate, being unprepared for upcoming regulations can lead to, you know, rushed or costly compliance efforts later, which is not great. The second sort of thing that we've encountered, which is interesting, is a lot of times we hear we've got this covered internally, and they don't. and it's not at all their fault. You know, I wouldn't want to be outsourcing or paying for something that I felt like I didn't need to. But, you know, when you say you have this covered and really it's one or two full-time employees that are spending 40 hours in the SmartWay spreadsheet doing these calculations manually and the number of requests for this data is increasing, you don't have it covered. And I think many companies assume that having an employee managing emissions reporting is sufficient. But the complexity of data collection and accuracy requirements and evolving regulatory frameworks sort of makes this approach unsustainable. And then the most important thing when it comes to misconceptions is that I think fleets tend to think emissions reporting doesn't benefit us in any way. It's a necessary evil. And I think emissions data is directly tied to fuel efficiency, right? Yes. The more that you emit, the more fuel consumption you have, in the same vein that the more you reduce your emissions, the more you're reducing your fuel consumption. And so tracking and optimizing emissions reveals inefficiencies. and I think also, you know, companies that can provide verified emissions data stand out in an increasingly competitive market. And so this is about your market position. This is about winning bids. This is about winning contracts.
Awesome. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, you know, when we're talking about sort of the fleet manager perspective, like I see that all the time where, you know, hey, yeah, we have someone that's handling safety and compliance. Yeah. And then you realize that this person has like 20 different hats on, dealing with all so many different pieces. That, did you know this new rule came out? No, like this is a big deal. Like, and that happens way too often. So like, I'm glad to hear that some fleets have a person full-time looking into it for reporting and stuff, but that's a lot of the times not even the case. It's on the side of other work that they're doing. And it's like, it's just not enough. So I am curious, explain, you know, you mentioned the SmartWay, or you're using spreadsheets to track this information. And I know there's a lot of different survey kind of questions and stuff that's involved in these types of reporting. What does it look like currently, or the old school way, with sort of that spreadsheet management? And then obviously, how does Greener improve that?
Yeah, so we have yet to encounter a fleet that is using a technology or a tool outside of spreadsheets to do their emissions reporting. So I think it's a very safe assumption to say that the most widely adopted way of doing this to date is utilizing the EPA SmartWay carrier spreadsheet or portal, which has evolved on its own. You know, it used to be the 17-tab Excel spreadsheet where you're putting your manually, which is still true, but you're manually inputting, you know, the distance traveled, the makeup of your fleet, and, you know, fuel data, fuel consumption numbers. And it was just this hyper manual sort of very long process that spit out an emissions estimate, not for the purpose of carbon accounting or greenhouse gas reporting that's going to be expected of shippers. But a lot of times shippers require their companies to be SmartWay certified. And so reusing that tool was the most available method of doing this.
Right.
And I'm talking past tense, but this is what fleets are doing today. And it makes total sense because they don't have other resources to be doing this. And so I know the SmartWay spreadsheet has evolved into a portal. And then also with that portal, outside of just quantitative data, now they're asking qualitative questions. So I guess sort of similar to their shippers. But what we, I guess what I should say is something else that you touched on that's really important for why this has become more complex is shippers have adopted corporate ESG software. And so because this is an unstandardized space, the format in which customers are requesting this data is different customer to customer, which sounds crazy, but it's true where, you know, sometimes it's bullets in an email, you know, what's your carbon footprint, which is super easy, or it's CDP and there's 200 questions. And do you have board level oversight? You know, do you align with a science-based target? And so what we've done is we have studied pretty much every, every data request that we've seen come through for the fleets that we've worked with. So we know what's included in a CDP disclosure, what's included in an EcoVadis disclosure, what the SEC requires in terms of qualitative questions in a disclosure, SB 253, Europe CSRD. And we have essentially created a questionnaire that has every single one of these possible questions. Some, you know, they overlap sometimes customer to customer, sometimes they don't. And we've created a multiple choice questionnaire. We provide multiple choice answers where you can answer in your own words to sort of shortcut that process. And then when you press download, it just pulls the quantitative data from your fuel card and your telematic system for that time period. So it really is push button reporting, and kind of what we're trying to do is create a report that is enough for you to give to a shipper and not have them come back and ask more questions, no matter what format they're requesting the data in.
And you mentioned before, you know, there's a lot of different partnerships or a lot of different, you know, companies that you're working alongside. I know that there's, you mentioned Geotab and Isaac and a lot of others, but like, I'm just curious, walk through sort of some of those different partnerships. Truckstop was one of your first ones, I believe. And then now eventually moving on to, you know, what's the future of partnerships that you see moving forward?
Yeah. So we have amazing partners in the space. So of course, Truckstop is one of them. And then we work very closely with Geotab, Isaac Instruments, and Omnitrax. They're integration partners for us. Amazing companies. And I would say what's really exciting is our relationship with Geotab is evolving. And, you know, we're working much more closely together, especially since they've launched their sustainability center. And so it's something we're super excited about to do a better job supporting their customer base, and, you know, building native add-ins and things that are going to ultimately make a Geotab fleet customer experience a little bit better. And then on the fuel card side, we're integration partners with WEX EFS. We're an innovation partner of Microsoft, which is something we're super proud of. And then I think when we look forward into the future, what you're going to see is our partnerships with accounting firms is going to intensify and formalize because, you know, when a fleet is trying to struggle or struggling with this and looking for support, accounting firms are one of the first places that they turn to. And ultimately, those accounting firms are the ones that are doing the third party audits. And so, you know, we're in early discussions with several of those accounting and consulting firms to help provide the technology to their client base. And then I would say there's other industry partners that we work with, driver placement firms like Fundamental Labor, which is amazing. And so I think what you could envision in terms of the trajectory of future partnerships is just those natural points of reach out for those fleets so that, you know, they're aware that Greener is there to help support them.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, I agree with everything about Geotab because when the ELDs rolled out and, you know, I think there's 300 different ELD or telematic companies that came out to try to like, deal, you know, manage that. And you're just like, a lot of these suck. And Geotab has just been amazing doing it right from the start and then creating this marketplace of partners, which is such the right way of doing it. You know, when ELDs rolled out, I totally thought, you know, okay, yeah, this 300 telematic providers will drop down to maybe 10, you know, and then the OEMs are going to adapt that into the vehicles and maybe they each have their own provider or something along that lines. But I thought the OEMs would be the end goal. Why have a third party when it's integrated into the vehicle? I am curious about any kind of OEM transition in the future or a discussion around that.
Yeah, it is. It's like you saw our product roadmap, Luke. OEM level integration, sort of our holy grail. That's what we're chasing in the end, because we know that telematics are becoming more and more digitalized. And so it makes a lot of sense for us to partner with the manufacturers themselves and have this just exist within the vehicle, especially because, you know, all of this data that we're reading off of a fleet management or a telematic device is ultimately coming from the telematics control unit and the ECM, which are parts that exist within the vehicle before you even put a fleet management device in there. And so, we will be super excited to explore a partnership with OEMs and provide that sort of value back to them.
And so a lot of this, a lot of what we're talking about, you mentioned some of the future. Is there other roadmap to the future? Where do you see greener scaling? And, you know, I know a lot of, I believe your sort of day-to-day is going out to fleets themselves, trying to create these relationships, going to state associations and more. Do you see a bigger growth process with whether it's a sales team to get out there, being involved or more of these one-on-one interactions? You know, what does the growth look like for Greener?
Yeah, it's a great question. So right now we're working with a 10-person team. They're absolutely amazing. But I think to your point, and any sort of challenge that an early stage company has is their size. And so in 2025 and looking forward, something, an intentional change that we've made is to lean very hard into our channel strategy. Who are our channel partners going to be? And ironically or unironically, they're the same companies that we integrate with, which is why it's so important for us to work closely, you know, with those telematic providers and those fuel card providers to make sure that we can go after, you know, if we're partnered with a company that already has an installed base of users, it makes it much more easier than me going, you know, to Hunt's Point and knocking on individual doors in the Bronx and saying, hey, is this something that you're struggling with? But, you know, that sort of aside, this is a relationship-based industry, which is not something that I had an appreciation for when I got started. And I have absolutely grown to love the people that make up the trucking industry so much. They're so honest. You never have to guess how they're feeling. And so my friendships in the industry are sort of what led to some of our earliest adopters. And so that's, to me, a very critical piece of the equation that I need to continue to grow. But when we do look forward into the future, of course, we'll be scaling our own internal sales organization alongside that channel strategy from a technical perspective and sort of product roadmapping and development. We're in what now we consider phase two. So not just emissions measurement and reporting. We've checked the box on that. You know, we're the only company doing it. We can do it with total automation. We're totally platform agnostic. You know, it is push button, it's third party assured, it's regulation compliant. But the second phase is actually focused on recommending solutions and really deep trend analysis. So creating subgroups of vehicles and identifying anomaly vehicles and outliers. So if I have 28 Detroit diesel engines, 6 of the 28 have unusually low MPG. Is that a vehicle performance problem? Is that a driver behavior problem? What's the drive to idle ratio? Things like that to contextualize performance and then recommending solutions. And wrapped up within that is actually an AI model that will help answer the qualitative questions within these questionnaires that these fleets are receiving. So you can query your database by asking a chat instead of having to poke around. Not that it's at all complex. Or if you get asked, does your climate transition plan align with a 2-degree world and you don't know what that means, you should be asking our model and we'll help you answer that. So that's sort of the direction that we're going right now.
That's awesome. Make it as painless as possible. And then, if beyond painless, it's of course, what does it cost, right? What's the software look like? And you want to make it as affordable as possible. I am curious, what's the structure look like for fleets? Is it a monthly software service? Is that what it looks like?
Yes. So we use a SaaS model. There are pricing is dependent on fleet size. We have 4 tiers. So we charge per vehicle per month, and then there's a one-time onboarding fee to back populate your data and to integrate. And so the price greatly reduces with your fleet size. And so I would say it's very fair, and I would say it's extraordinarily cost effective when you compare it to the time savings that you're going to have internally, the contracts you're going to retain that you don't want to lose, and then the new business that you're going to attract.
Yeah, totally agree. So what advice, this is all about fleets and making sure from that manager perspective, what advice do you give fleet operators who are hesitant of adopting emissions tracking technology?
I would say, think of it as it's a business tool. It's not just a compliance requirement. So emissions tracking isn't just about regulations. It's of course about running a more efficient, more profitable fleet, which is something that we touched on earlier, but it is a way to attract more business. Emission tracking capabilities and sustainability in general show up in 80% of shipper RFPs now, which is a huge, huge number. And so if you're looking to secure more business or make yourself in general more attractive, this is probably the best way to do it with the current environment. I would say, start small and build up over time. So many fleets assume that emissions tracking is a massive undertaking. You're working with Greener, it's not. But even if you're not, you don't have to overhaul everything overnight. So I would say definitely know your data sources. Start with simple data collection, tracking your fuel usage and your mileage, and then gradually layering in more detailed reporting over time. and then, with new regulations requiring third-party assurance, outdated spreadsheet calculations, they're not going to cut it. So investing in emission tracking technology prevents that last minute scrambling that we talked about earlier. And all it takes is one customer to ask, which is something that we say all the time, right? Where it's like, I have this under control. Someone, my director of safety is doing this reporting in SmartWay, everything's fine. And then it's like, your first customer that sends you a CDP report, that's a 400 question survey, and it's no longer under control. And so it only takes one, and this is probably the best way to future-proof your fleet. And if you're a fleet that is flipping your vehicles over, every 4 years, if you're doing asset upgrades, if you're investing in alternative fuels, if you're considering electrifying, you should be measuring the quantitative sort of reduction in emissions and fuel consumption that those initiatives are having, both for your internal purposes, but so that you can brag about it to your customers. And so I'd say, partner with a carbon accounting company that can help you tell that story.
Awesome. Well, hey, this has been fantastic. And, like we've been saying from the very beginning, it's only going to be more and more relevant in the coming months and years. And, regulations, this need is going to be there. And it's just a matter of time, matter of when are those questions going to hit a big fleet. So where can listeners learn more about Greener and get starting with the platform?
You can always go to our website, which is www.greenirr.com. I kick myself all the time for spelling the company that way. But that's definitely one place that you can look. You could reach out to info@greener.com and someone on our team will be reaching back out to you. Or there is a phone number on our website where you can schedule a demo. we have a LinkedIn. Follow us on LinkedIn if you want to see some updates on what's going on with us, or you can reach out to me directly.
Yeah, and of course, if you've got listeners right now listening, down in our YouTube comments, let us know, what are you dealing with? What emissions questions do you have? Data tracking, whatever it is, let us know down in the comments below, and we'll pass on that information. And of course, any other ways that you need it, we want to get you connected, we're going to have it linked down in the bio, and we just want to make sure we can connect you in that way. But again, Celine, thank you so much for joining me today. And as always, stay safe out there.